This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Explosive poop.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Beard, that's so unfair. That's so, can you just play the middle of that again? I think that's that must have been from the last time.
Yeah, it was.
Danny Wilniak of KCTV5 was on with us, and so this is how you take Danny out of context.
Let me get it pulled up.
For a reintroduction, unbelievable. If you couldn't quite pick that out, Beards will have it back in a second. Danny Wilniak, she hasn't hung up yet, of KCTV5, still on the phone with us right now. You can follow her on Twitter at KCTV. Danny, go ahead, Beards.
Explosive poop.
Danny, first, I'd like to just apologize. For Beards, I'm sorry.
My poor daughter is going to be so scarred when she gets older, and we're going to have all of these clips of me talking about her as a baby. And her friends are not going to let her live it down, and I've set her up for failure. So yeah. Thank you guys for scarring her for the rest of her life. I appreciate it. I guess it's my fault, so I really can't blame it on you.
This means that the young people are listening to us like 15 years from now. Yeah. We're good.
That's actually We're huge good. For us. And also, I think hugely generous of you to think that anybody around her age at any point in the future is going to have one flying care what we said
We're
about
gonna
anything.
We're going to be cool. We'll still be cool. We'll be the cool young hip radio host in Kansas City.
Yeah, just like we are now.
Yeah.
Yeah, super cool.
We are super cool.
A lot of teenagers, a lot of teens listening to us for our good jokes. Oh my goodness! I'll say this, Danny. If there's anything that you, even if it's completely unrelated, that you can blame on us just for the sake of like your standing as a mother, I go for it. Like none of us need that reputation or whatever. You could throw us straight under the bus if it helps out in literally any way.
Perfect. And anytime that I need to utilize you guys for that very reason, I definitely will. So if she shows up at some point at the radio station while you guys are on air, or even like tweets at you guys or jumps on the text line, you guys just have to own it and just say, well, you know what? Yep, that's what your mom said.
Yep.
So,
no, this is legally binding. This is recorded. You have this audio forever. You can download the podcast and put it on a super safe flash drive. Whatever it needs to be, we'll deal with it. This is kind of a funny, strange, and in some ways exciting, and in some ways kind of exhausting time to be doing various sports things. We got through the tournament. It's all over. We are almost to the NFL draft. I was saying this with Seth Kizer last night. Like, he's cannonballing into the draft process right now. I have been floating in this water for so long that my hands are pruny. Like, I'm ready to get out, but he's hopping in. And we've got the Royals have been interesting. Like, they've given us some things to talk about that's kept our attention, but also it's a long season that we can't help but overreact to one game at a time. So how have you enjoyed the last couple of weeks of kind of heading into a new sports season of coverage of all this nonsense?
It's been wonderful. I love it because you have a little bit of excitement, like you mentioned, just a little bit of excitement in just about every realm to keep people interested and to give you some kind of job security. So I love it from that standpoint. And then I also love the fact that it's kind of it's a slower time, so we're not nearly as crazy as we were back in February and March, but we still get to kind of enjoy relatively regular, like, normal human schedules while still covering sports. Not like it's 9 to 5, obviously, but I can actually come into work at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and not have missed too much and still be able to do my normal job. So it's been a lot of fun. I really like what we're seeing from the Royals now. That makes things exciting. And obviously with the draft coming up, there's so much to talk about with the draft. And I think there's a lot of holes that need to be filled on this Chiefs team, which we haven't had an opportunity to really talk about in years past because they've addressed most of those issues or contract extensions. And now they're at a point where they've got some salary cap issues. And so they're going to have to start filling holes with draft picks. So I'll be very, very intrigued in this year's draft to see what the Chiefs do.
Yeah, me too. And you did say doo-doo, and I'm just going to go ahead and point that out so no one has to tweet about it. Really going full circle on the, from the start of the show, the start of this hour. So let's talk about the draft holes a little bit, because that's the thing that I think might be most interesting is, like, we've got clearly the number one overwhelming glaring need is that this team doesn't currently have a left tackle on the roster with any, like, pro experience, right? Like, that one is incredibly obvious, but also it's been obvious for a while, and saying that you're going to just be in the first round picking at 31, or even if you're going to try to trade up and that you'll just figure it out come draft time, is a really weird strategy that is still making me super duper uncomfortable about who's protecting Patrick Mahomes' blind side. So what do you think about how that whole sort of left side of the offensive line, now we know Joe Tooney will be at the guard spot, They were swinging for Trent Williams. It didn't happen. Then nothing else has happened. And now we're looking ahead to the draft, and you're feeling what at that position?
Yeah, I think maybe a little unsettled is probably the best word to describe it, kind of like you were explaining. But also, I do have a lot of confidence in the idea that maybe Brett Veach is still looking for the opportunity to sign some kind of veteran at left tackle, even if it's just for a year, so that they have something there. But I do like the idea of looking for a tackle in the draft, because you have a young guy that you can bring up, kind of like a Lucas Niang, which hopefully you don't have the opt-outs this year, but that you can put in that spot. You can build him and develop him and make him what you want him on the offensive line and in that kind of scheme with Andy Reid and what he likes to do with his guys. So they've got their veteran guys in place. I think it's good to have the younger guy who's going to be there with Patrick for a while and build that continuity. And I think continuity on the offensive line is something that a lot of people take for granted. So it might be a little rough at the beginning of this upcoming season because you're seeing a whole lot of new guys and new faces there. Can Andy Reid make it happen? Yeah, of course, because that's what he does, and he is an offensive line guru. But I think that having some stability there and a young guy would also be a really, really good thing for this team.
Yeah, I agree with literally 100% of that. And I hope that there is something still with like Russell Okung and Alejandro Villanueva are both still out there. And will that eventually change? I don't know. But the thing that I'm starting to get, again, maybe a little bit unsettled by, I hope that they don't do, and this is what we're talking about last segment, and Nate Taylor gave a little inkling that this might be in the cards. Whenever Brett Veach gets worried that they're about to miss out on the last guy that fills a need from a certain class of player, a blue-chip guy or whatever, they trade up, which is what they did for Breland Speaks, and it didn't work. And then they traded up for Mecole Hardman, who is a professional wide receiver, but they could have waited and gotten him or DK Metcalf later. Like, you know, Speaks was a disaster. Hardman has been kind of underwhelming, just to be as fair as possible. If they do that with the tackle position, I can't help but be nervous that there might be a reach or an overpay to move up a number of draft spots or whatever. If they do end up with one of those veterans, and maybe they're planning on taking someone in the second round or the third round like Lucas Niang, I start feeling a whole lot better about that position as a whole, and they can just take the best player available at 31.
Yeah, I think those are all very valid points. Yeah, I just think that they do need a younger guy there. And as much as I do like Okung, he's an Oklahoma State guy and was there around the time that I was.
Yeah.
So I know that he's a very, very good fit, I think, there. Alejandro Villanueva, also a very good option. But I do think that Veach mentioned it in his press conference a while ago, was that this is one of the deepest offensive line drafts that he's seen in a while, which is cool to hear. But do you necessarily, like you mentioned, want to go with an offensive lineman in the first round, or do you want to start gambling with what you have and moving up and trying to figure out all of that stuff? And, of course, you brought up the Mecole Hardman situation, and I still am holding out hope that he's going to be a bigger contributor than he has been. And maybe that's optimistic thinking, but I definitely think that's going to be the case. But no, you very, very much have very good facts to back up your line of thinking. And I don't think it's wrong. I definitely don't.
I think this show is at its best whenever it's just you and me agreeing on Chiefs things. Like, what could possibly be better radio?
I'm sorry.
No, I love it.
You make very good points.
No, you made very good points the answer before. I'm loving it. I feel great about not having to rethink everything and get very defensive about whatever I've been so terribly wrong about. That'll probably come whenever we talk about the Royals at some point. Then I'll be wrong and you can correct me on something. But you also mentioned like a number of issues that they might still have to fill. What else are you looking at? Because again, tackle's the obvious thing. But if you go, hey, maybe this one's a little under the radar because left tackle's so glaring, what are you looking at either in terms of specific prospects or position groups that the Chiefs could be looking to improve at still?
Yeah, no, I think one of the things that people may be overlooking, or maybe not, is I'm, as a former wide receiver, the receiving corps is like number one on my list, and it's what I'm going to be like breaking down or pinpointing certain things. And you lose Sammy Watkins, which, let's be honest, he was injured most of the time anyways, and you didn't really have him anyways. Mm-hmm. But you need that big guy who's going to be really good for you on deep routes and be able to go up and get the ball when you're in the red zone or in end zone packages. And they just don't have that guy. I think they want DeMarcus Robinson to be that guy, but he hasn't really shown that he can do that on a consistent basis. Tyreek Hill is obviously their number one, and he's a phenomenal receiver, but you just have to have that complement. You have to have, it's called a receiving corps for a reason. You can't just have one receiver and expect to be, you know, dominant from that perspective. So I personally think that they need to go looking for another receiver, another big receiver that they can rely on. But then on the other side of the ball, Legarius Sneed showed that he can be a starting corner, and they moved him around a lot because he was, you know, he was in the slot and then he was outside, and he proved that he could be good at both positions. And so I think he showed a lot, but I don't think it would hurt to go out and get another corner. I think corner is another area of need just to have that depth and have someone there who's also going to be really solid for you. And, I mean, the Chiefs have done a phenomenal job at finding, you know, diamonds in the rough at that position. So maybe they wait a little later in the draft to find another guy of that nature. But, I mean, even linebacker. Linebacker is something that they need to address and look at and maybe find a couple of younger guys to fill roles there too. So that would be my opinion.
I'm just going to keep agreeing with you, but I'm going to go back to receivers because I'm glad that you mentioned it, because I wanted to ask you about the receivers because of your specific expertise, and also because this receiving class is so interesting, and they're so, I mean, the crop of college receivers that are going to just keep coming out on a yearly basis, they're just aliens. They're just aliens that you could find in the third and fourth round, absolute physical freaks. They can do all sorts of different things, but the specifically like different types of receivers and trying to find a Sammy Watkins type of replacement and all the things you said about Tyreek Hill and the core as a whole being completely on the nose, like they have extra speed in Mecole Hardman, but like especially I can point to specifically in the second half of last year, they were finding manufactured touches for him in the first 15 scripted plays. He was getting involved, but he was sort of fading out later on into the games because he wasn't whatever the reasoning is, he wasn't showing up in sort of the natural flow of the offense. So would you then go into this specific class trying to find, like you said, the bigger body that can continue to kind of round out the group of receivers as a whole, where you are looking for more of a Sammy Watkins type of replacement?
Yes, absolutely. And look, I'm even one to say, hey, look, go after a receiver with that first round pick. Move up if you want to get a little bit crazy, because you're investing not only in the offense and in a big receiver who's going to make big game changing plays, but you're also investing in Patrick Mahomes and any opportunity to be able to allow him to be more comfortable in the offense and in his receiving core is going to make this team better as a whole because he has those options. I mean, yeah, you can create the gadget plays and you can get Mecole and Tyreek involved in that kind of stuff. And are they fun and tricky? And sometimes, most of the time, they work. Yes. But if you can literally just have the purest form of a quarterback to receiver offense and just throw the ball up and know that if that guy's going to go one-on-one and high point the ball, you know he's going to win every time, that's worth it to me. And so I think that's why that is such a position of need, is because when you have the most potent quarterback in the National Football League who has the biggest arm, you have Tyreek Hill, but you need somebody who's he plays bigger than he is, but yep. you need somebody who is a true, true receiver who is going to go up and win every single one of those battles. And so that's why I think that that's an important position to go after in the draft.
I did a mock draft with a bunch of the individual people who cover the team for the whole Sports Illustrated Fan Nation network that went up today. And as the board was falling, Rashad Bateman just kept falling, and he was there at 31, and I couldn't not take him there because he's one of the few guys where he's really close to 6 foot even, but he's got longer arms than pretty much anybody else anywhere near the top of the draft class. He also plays bigger than he is, but is bigger than Tyreek Hill, and it would just fill my heart with so much joy. Like, I understand that also people could say as a counterpoint, you know, drafting a left tackle would also be investing in Patrick Mahomes. I think that's true and fair.
That's true.
But, man, do you know how great it would be? Also, like, Tyreek Hill's contract comes up relatively soon. I think the Chiefs will probably just make that happen pretty easily, but they're going to have to do some math there at some point as well. I just want them to take a receiver within the first two or three rounds, like every year forever, and just make sure you always have another weapon coming to step into that spot. And also, Bateman wouldn't make Mecole Hardman redundant. He might make DeMarcus Robinson a little bit redundant, but then also he doesn't have to start right away because you have Robinson. While Bateman would figure it out. I would just be so happy. I don't think he's actually going to be there at 31, but I would just be so happy.
No, I definitely think he would be a good option. I mean, he's the kid out of Minnesota, and then there's also a guy that's pretty close to him. I think he's a little over 6 foot in Kadarius Toney, who's out of Florida, speaking yep. of, you know, DeMarcus Robinson. So there's another big guy that potentially could fall, and I just think there's a couple of different guys on this list that are worth moving for or figuring out how to get because receiver is so vital. And again, you've got, you know, pretty much four different receiver positions. And if you can have guys that are going to be on the field and potent whenever you put them out there, whenever you put out that spread package, you know that one of those guys is going to be able to make a play, then why not invest in that? So I'm, again, here we go, agreeing again. This is ridiculous. I can't even handle all this happiness and excitement with you right now.
I just think that we're smart and right and also funny and entertaining, and nobody else is as good at talking about specifically receivers and the Chiefs draft plans as we are, and that's something to be ashamed of. It's just simply true. Let's leave the comfort zone then, because we don't get a ton of chances to talk about the Royals here because oftentimes they're playing while we're talking about other stuff, and we'll get plenty into NFL draft stuff for the remainder of the next couple of weeks. But Brad Keller today looked really good after looking really terrible in his first two starts. That was maybe the biggest story, I think, of the first couple of weeks of Royals baseball. And today, I started feeling a little bit better about him kind of riding the ship. What did you think about his start today?
Yeah, and even Mike Matheny said it afterwards. You know, we can all speculate as media members and say, are there question marks there for Brad Keller? Maybe, if only two starts. But then after the game, after Keller had a really good outing today, he came out and said, you know, there may have been those question marks that were pretty warranted, even though it was only two starts, but Brad went back and made the adjustments and knew that it was enough of a concern, not only for the people watching, but also for him internally, that he was going to go back and resort to what he does best and hit his spots with his fastball. And at one point, he even hit like 97 or 98 miles per hour in a really critical situation. That's the big thing, too, is that when he comes up clutch and he struck out Mike Trout, and yet Trout was not having a very good weekend, mm-hmm. but it's still, he's one of the best players in all of baseball. And to be able to get him out with bases loaded, I think it was the third inning, and then get the following batter out to save himself from that, I thought showed a lot of mental strength and a lot of fortitude, because when you have two starts like he had, it's really easy as a pitcher to get mental and to really lose what you are and what you're capable of. I think we saw a little bit of that with Danny Duffy last year, mm-hmm. On that roller coaster. But for him to be able to kind of flip a switch and be able to get through those big moments and have the outing that he did today, I think it proved to not only the media and to the people outside, but also the guys within that organization and Keller himself, that he can be the ace and that people don't necessarily need to worry about him. And again, it's I keep telling people that, you know, 10 baseball games is equivalent to one NFL game. So right. It's a very, very small sample size. But it's very good to be able to see him in three starts be able to turn it around the way he did today.
Yeah. What do you do in terms of managing what you just mentioned there in terms of the sample size and everything? Because I think in some ways it's the most interesting single thing about baseball is that you have 162 games to figure out what a team actually is. Like it's one of the sports where you are most likely to have the most deserving playoff teams and the most deserving champions and the most deserving World Series because you get a long, long season. And then even then, you know, you eventually end up in seven-game series at the end of it all, but it's hard not to overreact whenever you have like your opening day starter have two terrible outings, but then you overreact back to the middle again whenever he has a great third outing. So what do you have, like a personal philosophy of how not to start every newscast with the Royals are terrible or the Royals are going to the World Series after every single game?
It's very much I don't necessarily panic until you get about midway through the season. And that might be a little bit too long for a lot of baseball fans. But after going through 2014 and having the kind of start that they did and then being able to go all the way to the World Series, I'm never going to discount them for having, you know, a bit of a rough start or having those small sample sizes look really good or look really bad. And so, I mean, they haven't gotten off to good starts in the past, and this year it's a pretty good start for them starting 6-4. So I personally take everything kind of with a grain of salt. So I think that Royals fans can get a little excited because of the 6-4 start and what it means to this organization to be back at a point where these guys are excited. And like, I bring up the Mike Matheny fist pump and the fact that he's doing that and getting the guys excited and letting them be excited. And Salvador Perez and even Danny Duffy have let out these yells the past couple games that just make you feel like it's 2015 all over again. So I think there's a reason to be excited, even though it's a small sample size. But my philosophy is that I'm not going to crown them World Series champions or say that this is the worst team in baseball until we get to about the halfway point.
I think that's fair. I also love the Matheny thing. You're right. Whenever Danny Duffy got out of that, I think he had bases loaded that he was getting out of last night, if memory serves. It was a bad scenario. He got out of it, and then you could see him fist pump and scream leaving the mound, and Matheny's fist pumps from the sidelines and everything. And they brought it up on the TV broadcast earlier today as well, that Matheny was asked back in his introductory press conference, like, hey, what are you going to do differently from what you did in St. Louis, with the context of that being like, whenever you weren't very good at this, like, and whenever things got out of control a little bit. And Matheny's answer to that was, I'm going to like enjoy the victories and the successes more as they're happening. And boy, he's lived up to that. Like, that's one of those things where I would not have, by virtually any metric, said that the St. Louis Mike Matheny would be a guy that would seem like he's having fun with baseball, that would be fun to watch and be fun to play for. And Kansas City Mike Matheny has looked like exactly that.
Yeah, and that's what's made it fun. And it definitely translates to the players, and the players feel it, and you can see it in the players. And I love that because I think it makes baseball that much more exciting.
Yeah.
But also from that perspective, in that he very much so sticks up for his guys, and whether that changes down the road, I don't know. But I mean, I think the primary example of that is we're reporters. We have to ask tough questions. But earlier this season when they initially said that Mondesi was out and hurt, somebody asked him if he'd given up. Like, do you give up on a guy at this point in his career because he hasn't been able to be consistent? And Matheny he clutched his hands together and his knuckles went white while explaining why they hadn't given up on Mondy yet and how much potential he still has and how excited they are to have him as a staple and a star of this team and what he can bring to it. And I think that gives the guys a lot of confidence, and it gives them the ability to go out there each and every night knowing that their manager has their backs no matter what goes on. And even with Keller, you saw Matheny trying to explain why he's going through these things or give you the perspective of what's going through the pitcher's head. And then finally, once they get over that hump or have kind of gotten over that hump, he can go back and explain those conversations that were had inside the dugout or as he's walking to and from the pitching mound. And I think that is very good to see from a leader and from a guy right now who is leading a team that really needs that after the last couple of seasons that they've had.
Yeah, I think it's super interesting. And again, specifically the different versions of him and how Matheny has changed and what he's stood up for here and everything, I think has been one of maybe the more underrated, interesting stories in Kansas City since he got here. And maybe that'll change if they keep winning. All right, Danny, last question. Do you have a bug fact?
When do I not have a bug fact?
You've never not had a bug fact. It's time for Danny's Bug Facts! Quick context if you are a new listener to the show. Danny Wilniak took a invertebrate zoology class in college. I think I got all of those facts right?
Absolutely. Yeah, almost as good as my bug facts.
And she's got bug facts just stemming from that now and forever. She is also a resident bug expert. Danny, what is your bug fact for today?
Large groups of fireflies will sometimes flash in unison purposefully.
Huh. Interesting.
They know that each other is flashing at the same time. Now, I can't get into the specifics of that because I'm not quite sure how that all works. But sometimes purposefully, large groups of fireflies will flash in unison.
Huh.
Very interesting.
Very? I had no idea that was a thing. Also,
so next time you guys go out and try to catch fireflies, you now know. Okay. This could happen.
I love fireflies. And also, at least twice now, one recently, we've put out poll questions asking if you call them fireflies or lightning bugs. I always grew up a lightning bug child. But maybe I'm a firefly adult now. I'm not sure.
You can call them whatever you want. It's the same thing. So it's like crayon and crayon, right?
Yeah, but that's like a dialect thing, right? Like lightning bug and firefly, I think it's very like regional. Have you always just called them fireflies?
No, we call them back and forth. There's no specific, but I guess it's also like soda or Coke or pop.
Yeah.
Or whatever you call that. That's regional, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's a great comparison. I would love to go crack open a brewski with some shiny butt bugs, which is what I call them. Thank you, Danny. It is always an absolute pleasure to talk to you, especially when we just agree on things and you give us a great fact about one of my favorite bugs. It's really a treat.
Always here for it. Thanks, Briscoe.
Danny Wilniak of KCTV5. Follow her on Twitter, not just for all of her sports news and opinions, but also her bug facts. You follow her on Twitter at KCTV Danny. That's D-A-N-I. You almost certainly know that, right? Listener, you have to know that. But at KCTV, KCTV Danny on Twitter, you can watch her all the time, all over the place on Channel 5. Also, you have the Locker Room Show. You follow her on Twitter. Follow all their stuff on Twitter, and you'll find all their stuff because that's what Twitter right there.
Find it.
That's what Twitter is good for.
Go find it.
Find the people that you like and follow them, and then they'll tell you where they're going to do things and when and what and where and why and how.
And then follow us regardless if you like us or not. Heckle us and compliment us. We don't care.
Please, please follow everyone everywhere. It's a healthy way to live your life. I promise. My fingers are crossed. No, it's not necessarily healthy. You know what is healthy, though? Following Danny Milner on Twitter.
Very
at
healthy.
KCTV Danny. You'll learn about sports, bugs, and life.
Sometimes all at once.
Oftentimes all at once. What was this segment? If not learning a little bit about all three of those things.
I'm a better person.
Still not a good one.
Nope.
But better. What else could you ask for?
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Cleveland State has a coach named Dickie Nutt. And I'll now move on to another topic.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I got a good tweet here from our friend Matt Derrick. Somebody tweeted one good tweet already, so here's the first good tweet. If your social security number was how much money you had, how rich would you be?
if your social security account was how much you had.
Your number was how much money.
I would then have
Beard, you're going to have to cut his mic. You're going to have to cut his mic before. I don't want Rudy to get his identity stolen on the radio.
that wasn't it. It doesn't start with a two. But I would...
You could probably say the first number of your social security number. I would be in the
5 millions. Here's the thing: if somebody can figure out my social, like
I don't,
it is,
between right?
five. Yeah, because it's seven digits, right? One, two. No, it's eight digits. Oh, no. Whoa, I was way off. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's 9 digits.
I know. What
I would have more than $1. I'm playing it safe.
Anyway, well, here's what Matt Derrick's response was.
Yeah,
pretty sure I would still be less rich than Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
That is true.
I would technically have more than what's on the contract.
All right, so Rudy's first three digits are higher than 503.
Yes.
Get at it, identity thieves.
Rudy, you're playing a dangerous game here.
What are your next two numbers?
See, I'm not telling you that.
Are you sure? We got you to guess the first three.
Well, I
said the first one. It definitely starts with a five. It is between 500 million and 599,999,999.
We got the range.
Yeah, if you can figure that out, honestly, like, my identity's not great, have at it.
This is what you're not realizing, Beards, is the best case, like, worst case scenario for Rudy is that someone steals his identity and pays his student loans.
Yeah, take my debt, please.
Yeah.
Like, I would be thrilled. I also, Josh, just found on Etsy.
My social security number.
A G Fuel shaker wall mount. Oh, boy. It's $3. You just want to mount your G Fuel cups.
You want to what?
Mount your G Fuel cups.
He heard you. I
was just curious if anything like that existed. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna look this up.
Here's the thing, Rudy. I want you to find happiness. I want you to chase your bliss.
I don't really like the way those look, so I wouldn't buy them.
I'm afraid that if you have in your new apartment that you're going to be moving into, a chance to put something on the wall for the first time in 3.5 years.
I don't know if it's going to happen.
I'm afraid that if the only thing on your wall is your mounted G Fuel cups, that is officially a series wrap on Rudy Salazar's love life. That's my concern for you.
Who's to say it hasn't wrapped a long time ago, man? This point, just out here living my life.
I just want that possibility to be on the table.
Yeah.
And I think that having a bunch of G Fuel cups prominently displayed is slightly worse than an exorbitant number of Funko Pops and slightly better than bunch of shrunken heads.
I only have 4 Funko Pops.
Slightly better.
Do you put them in the G Fuel cups?
I do not. No.
I have a couple Funko Pops. Yeah. If they're a part of,
I have them like on my bookshelf, like in front, like so. Like I have a book.
Yeah,
I have a book.
Absolutely.
Shelf. As I fill up books, then I'll put stuff in front of the books. You know, like on said shelf.
Totally, totally chill to have, you know, a few Funko Pops. I think if it's like a if you have a Funko wall, I just want to talk, you know? I'm just sort of curious why that's your aesthetic.
And for me, and so I'll go a little bit farther with that, too, where because I've just seen videos of people who collect them, but, like, they keep them in the boxes, so they just have, like, a wall of them in the box. And for me, I understand there's a sense of, like, there's a collector, right? Keep them in mint condition.
But they
maybe
make,
there were some,
but
also,
they make so many of them.
But, like, I want them to be out. I want them to be, like, on a bookshelf. I want to see them. I don't want to see them in the box.
I think this is something that has really plagued our generation the most, and our kind of specifically like millennials. I don't know if Gen Zers are doing this or not. God, that's the old. I'm a boomer now.
Yep.
But like I for a long time, like whenever I got certain bobbleheads or whatever, I had an inclination of like, well, we keep those. Maybe this is all of our parents' faults instead of being, I don't know, if I can blame my parents for my shortcomings, I mean, I'll do it.
Absolutely.
But where it's like, oh, you know, and I think this was something that I picked up somewhere along the way, and I think my parents were probably suggesting I do the inverse of this. I was like, well, but if I keep this baseball, this plastic bobblehead that there were a billion of these made already, if I keep these in here, maybe I'll be able to pay for college someday. And
it's
in reality,
those darn Beanie Babies' fault.
It's the Beanie. Now, the Beanie Babies, if I was going to use those to pay for college, I would have done that already. And I'm not going to. But with like old baseball cards from a generation or two generations before, when they weren't being mass produced quite like they are now, you do find some value. But the $1 pack of Score brand football cards that I bought, 100,000 of over the course of the 2008 football season, those aren't worth anything.
No.
They were fun.
Yeah.
There's something for me to spend a little bit of money on when I had a little bit of money, I'll buy a box of them for $12 and have a great time opening a whole box and seeing if I can complete a full set. I got a Patrick Chung signed card in there at one point. Never sold it. Still have it somewhere. He's not Lawrence Taylor, so it's probably not going to matter.
Close, maybe, some say.
Yeah, some are saying. Some are saying that he's basically Ed Reed.
People are saying it's a hot commodity. I'm the people, but people are saying.
Oh, Ronald Acuña has 6 home runs. He's got 2 today.
He is.
Good at baseball.
So, when I hear his name, I just get a little sad. Because,
It's going to make me a little sad, I bet.
Here's the thing. I got 2 stories for you. They're going to make you real sad. Because it's about what could have been. It's about 2 young outfielders. Both actually happen to be in the National League East. First one, Ronald Acuña Jr. There was a story. So Ronald Acuña Jr., if you don't know, is Alcides Escobar's cousin.
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
Ronald Acuña Jr. woke up on July 2nd expecting to sign with the Royals. Ronald Acuña Jr. then changed his mind and signed with the Braves. So I always thought that was obviously like one of the Royals' like biggest like misses, right? Like something that they were like super confident they had. They were like, "Yes, we got this. This guy's ours." And then it wasn't. A few years ago, I was in Surprise, Arizona for spring training, and Soren Petro was interviewing Rene Francisco, who handles a lot of the the scouting. He's in charge basically of their overseas, especially in Latin America, development and scouting and all that. So Petro just simply asked him that question, like, what was your biggest, like, oh, we thought we had him.
Such a good question.
And I just assumed, I was like, oh, I know where he's going. Like, he's going with Ronald Acuña Jr. Because, like he was, like, look how good he is. He said, nope. He said, the guy who I was 100% positive we were going to get, who we had, and he decided not to sign with us, was Juan Soto.
Mm.
There's a universe in which the Royals have both Ronald Acuña Jr. and Juan Soto in their outfield. And it hurts. Oh, boy, does it hurt. Could you imagine?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes, I can. I'm imagining it now.
If the Royals had those two in their lineup right now, we're talking about them as contenders.
Absolutely. There's no, sorry, Kyle Isbell, your call-up's going to have to wait.
Now, flip side.
Andrew Benintendi's not happening.
Flip side, they'd be too good and we wouldn't have Bobby Witt Jr. So, Bobby Witt Jr. has never played in the big leagues? Or 2 of the 5 best outfielders in baseball? What do you want? It's tough. It's a tough choice. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. has given us so much content over the last 2 years.
I mean, we keep saying we'll get to him at some point. I don't think he's giving us any content.
We're going to get to him.
Ronald Acuña Jr. could have given us a lot of content also. Yeah. What's the blue-haired guy with the Marlins name? I thought for sure Rudy was going to know this. Not Marlins man.
Blue-haired guy.
He's got blue hair. He plays for the Marlins. He seems fun.
Oh, I think I just learned about this guy this year.
Yeah. No, he's hot on the scene.
Oh, goodness. I know exactly who you're talking about.
All right,
but
let me know. You find it.
I'll
tell me his
to
name.
Roster. I know exactly who you're talking about, too, now.
I want the Royals need to have blue hair.
Like I never, like I actually never heard commercial. Of this guy. Chisholm. Jazz Chisholm Jr. Because I want to talk to you about
this
guy. Because his name is Jazz Chisholm Jr.
And you got to make sure you don't do any sort of first letter, last name, sort of confusion.
Yeah, because like that is just a cool name. Like, I thought, I remember when I first saw him, and like, I think it was an ESPN package, and he was talking, and I was like, I was like, this is legitimately the first time I've ever heard of this guy, and he might be the coolest guy in baseball already. Your name's Jazz Chisholm Jr.? It doesn't get cooler than that.
Yeah, as long
you're JCJ.
WWJD. I'll wear the bracelet. What would Jazz do?
He's just a cool guy. His name's Jazz.
You've mentioned that.
Cool guy.
Tasty food, too.
Great food.
He's both a young, up-and-coming baseball pitcher, baseball player and a Louisiana kitchen.
He's got a 1.048 OPS this year. You know what he's hitting?
A baseball, I would hope.
Well, yeah. You know what his batting average is?
690.
269.
Well...
that's okay.
It's not quite as good.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's not as good as what I wanted it to
be. I mean, it's as nice as it can be in baseball. Like, you don't hit.
He could be like 315.
369 would be 370, 380, whatever. Like, you know,
I mean, 369 is, like, not super realistic.
But it'd be better.
And if he was hitting 069, he wouldn't be in the big leagues.
And yet you'd call it nice.
Yeah, 269 is nice.
No, 069.
No, you'd be in the minors.
And you'd say it was nice.
No.
In the minors.
If that was his batting average in the minors, we would have a significant problem. let's see.
I mean, if he's into 069, I'd say nice, but he wouldn't be, if he was hitting 069, he wouldn't be playing.
Jazz
is too good for that.
I'm going to 2019 baseball reference because it's obviously the last full season.
Yeah, to see... I assume if anybody hit 369.
So actually, there's actually a couple of things that I'm looking for here. Batting average leader was Tim Anderson, 335.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some, I wonder if,
do
I,
you
I imagine
know,
at some point somebody has hit 369 in a year. It's just like, it just doesn't happen.
By the way, Aaron Ladd just tweeted Ronald Acuna Jr. That's all he said.
Yeah.
Just popped up.
It's understandable.
It's a hard C there, Beard.
Beard, Acuna.
Beard's
Acuna.
Made it Osuna, and Rudy forgot the Enye. Acuna. It's like jalapeno. That's the little squiggly boy over the N. It's an Enye. This is, welcome to the show Gets Weirdly Distracted by Baseball. Five guys played 162 games last year.
Wait, what?
2 years ago.
I was going to
say. Last full season.
I was
last
like,
full season,
I was
2019.
Like, wait, what?
2019.
Like, how's that possible?
2019, five guys played 162 games.
Were two of them Juan Soto and Ronald Acuña?
No, but two of them were Royals.
Yeah, that actually checks out.
That sounds like a radio tease to me.
Wit.
And?
Oh, was it Jorge? Because he DH'd like all year?
It sure was.
Yeah.
He didn't strain his butt at all.
Did not strain the butt because they basically just left him as a DH. You don't strain your butt when you're DHing. Strain
Beards.
Your butt in the outfield.
Did you? No.
What?
Okay, I have a legitimate. Do you know who led the league in at-bats last year?
In 2019.
It was Witt.
Yeah, that checks out.
I have a stat, though. If you're sitting here...
Led baseball in hits.
If you're sitting here right now...
I think American League,
and
actually.
You're thinking, man, I love when this show talks about the Chiefs in the NFL draft,
yeah.
But I really want them to talk about who led the league in triples in 2019. Well,
obviously.
Don't you go anywhere, because you'll find out.
Prize.
Next.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
So Lair had, like, a butt strain again. What was his injury that he had in spring training? Was it abdominal?
A butt strain sounds about right.
Now we gotta look this up.
It sounds better than anything else that could actually be true. So, I mean, let's just go with it.
It was an oblique injury.
You mispronounced butt strain.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
In 2019, four players in baseball had 10 triples.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was the Arizona Diamondbacks' Eduardo Escobar. The other three were Royals.
Ronald Acuna Jr. and Juan Soto and Bobby Witt Jr.
It was Whit Merrifield, Hunter Dozier, and Adalberto Mondesi.
Ah, close.
That's wild. That's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised about, obviously, Merrifield and Mondesi. Even though, like, that, it's the odds of them having two would be pretty crazy. But, like, Hunter Dozier also getting in there with 10.
Four guys had 10. Three of them were Royals.
That's what speed do.
Do you know who led the league in singles in 2019?
I bet it was Witt.
You'd be correct. Do you know who?
Because I think he led American League in hits.
All right, quick. Who led in adjusted OPS plus?
Oh boy, in baseball?
Yeah.
Ronald Acuna Jr.
No, Mike Trout. How about adjusted batting runs?
Ronald Acuna Jr.
Mike Trout. Adjusted batting wins.
Juan Soto.
That would be Mike Trout.
Close.
Base out runs added.
Tim Salem.
That'd be Mike Trout, not that fish guy. Base out wins added.
For the Angels though.
It'd also be Mike Trout.
Tim Flounder.
At bats per home run.
Ronald Acuna Jr.
That would be Mike Trout. Pretty much the answer to all the advanced stats is Mike Trout or Christian Yelich.
Tim Salmon.
And no other fish guys.
Don't forget about him.
We'll talk to David Leskey about Mike Grouper.
You are listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.